Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, your host and founder of Product Innovation Educators, where I help product managers become product masters. Trends can be a product manager's best friend. They can propel products, increasing adoption by customers, or if misread, they may have the opposite impact. To learn about identifying and using trends and their importance, I contacted Max Luthi. He is the director of trends and insights at Trend Watching, a company that scans the globe identifying emerging consumer trends and changes in trends. He is also the co-author of the book, Trend-Driven Innovation. Before becoming a trend-watching expert and keynote speaker, Max was involved in the music industry, certainly an important industry for trends also. Now, if you hear something that you want to refer back to during the interview, you're in good hands because I took notes for you. You'll find the summary of the discussion and the full transcript at theeverydayinnovator.com/083. Max, thanks for joining the Everyday Innovators.
Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
I'm glad to be talking with a true trend watcher. I often, Everyday Innovators listening know I talk about trends. I also have the pleasure of teaching university courses. And we typically, you know, if it's a business course, you can't get through a business degree without learning about SWOT. You know, the strengths, weaknesses, opportunities.
Of course.
Yep. And I add a T to the end. People have worked with me probably ran into this. But I always do a SWOTT. And my last T is, as you might suspect, is trends.
Oh, wow. Talking.
So
this is brilliant news.
you're welcome to borrow it. Feel free.
I think we will.
And people with, you know, hard advocates of SWOT will say, you know, this is a really good, simple, but powerful strategy type tool. Will say, you know, trends should come up in your opportunities and threats analysis. But I've seen too many times it just gets missed. And the importance of trends when it comes to product changes, product development, product management work, it just, some things can get overlooked. And I have too many horror stories when it happens. And we still, even if we emphasize it, it can still get overlooked. But I put in the extra T to make sure we don't overlook it.
That's a good idea. I mean, and the typical thing is to think that you only have to think about them in November. You know, you need to, or October. It's sort of, okay, 2016 is coming to an end. What's happening next year? And, you know, as anyone can figure out if they really think about it, the trends don't begin and end at, you know, on New Year's Eve.
Right. They're always changing.
Constantly changing.
Yeah. New things coming up on my newsfeed all the time. So let's start off with talking about why trends actually are important and how they impact the work we do in innovation and product development.
Well, essentially, without kicking off with too many platitudes, the only constant really today is change. Mm-hmm. Things are constantly changing. And as a result, what your customer expects from your products, from your services, from your marketing, from your customer service, from your logistics, from your supply chain, you know, all of their expectations around your brand and your product are changing constantly. So tracking trends is really about, you know, seeing these changes happen and adapting and evolving your strategy to stay ahead of them. The last thing you want is this, you know, expectation gap where you haven't seen the trends, you haven't seen the shift,
right,
and you're doing the same thing as yesterday or last year or a decade ago, and it's no longer, you know, meeting what consumers demand from you.
Exactly. And when those trends shift, it can really make a big difference. If you hit the trend that is going down, it can kill your new product. If you hit it going up at the right time, it can be a great blessing, right?
Exactly. I'm going to say, it almost reminds me of the that old expression, how did you go bankrupt? And it's, you know, slowly at first and then really quickly. I think if you're not, the trends can be changing constantly and you're thinking, oh, these changes are happening and they're very incremental. We don't need to worry about this. It's not a major shift. And then all of a sudden, you know, to throw out the cliches like Kodak or Blockbuster, you're sort of wondering, wow, how did that happen?
Yeah, absolutely. And Kodak is such a sad story to, you know, such an innovation powerhouse.
Mm.
Hopefully a lot of people know the story now that they actually had the first patent on the digital camera.
I know.
Created
it's
that.
It's heartbreaking.
I've talked to insiders in the R&D department that said that they still had imaging applications, especially for the medical industry, that aren't in existence yet in the marketplace, that they were so far ahead with what they were doing, and they just never got out. Sad story. But let's. I want to spend our time really diving into why, you know, we addressed why trends are important a little bit. I want to talk about how we pay attention to trends and specifically, you know, spot them and what to do with them. When we were talking earlier, you talked a little bit about watching business. How is watching businesses important for consumer trends? And I know most of the work you do there at Trend Watching is around consumer trends. And what's the connection with paying attention to businesses?
So this is our sort of counterintuitive secret. You know, that it would be very easy to think, well, if you want to understand the consumer, the best thing you can do is ask them, look, you know, what will you expect from us in coming months and years? And as everyone from Henry Ford to Steve Jobs has pointed out, the consumer typically doesn't know. And even if they did know, they might not tell you. So that's where traditional market research can fall short. And then, you know, things like ethnography are very time intensive and expensive to pull off. And even big data in terms of revealing trends, it's only as good as the data you have access to. And, you know, you have to know what you're looking for. So what we're actually pushing is this methodology of watching businesses. It's cheap and it's effective. And the reason we're looking out for businesses to better understand customers is it's the innovations from businesses across industries around the world that create new expectations and lead to these the emergence of new trends.
So can you connect an example to help us just get our hands around that a little bit about when you were watching a business that led to a consumer trend? And I'm going to talk to you about examples more later, but I want to get the importance of paying attention to businesses.
Sure. I mean, a sort of classic example would be to understand how a business can heighten expectations would be something like the first time that you used Uber. I'm sure everyone can remember, whether it was 3 years ago, 6 years ago, the first time you pull out the app and you hail a taxi and you can see it coming on the map, you can pay without getting out your wallet, you can rate the driver. That whole experience immediately heightens your expectation. Yeah. So that's the first thing we're looking for at Trendwatching is the innovations, but there are two other key ingredients. We're looking for drivers of change that are, you know, causing or enabling the trend. So these can be environmental, societal, political, technological drivers, you know, such as progress with artificial intelligence development, or even, you know, a food safety scandal. These are the sort of the second thing we're constantly looking out for. And then we're looking for the basic human needs and wants at the heart of a trend. So these don't change from month to month. These are things like the desire for status, the desire for love, the desire for safety, for convenience. So we look for when the drivers of change bump up against the core human needs and wants, and then innovators alleviate those points of tension. So companies like Uber can resolve those points of tension, driving up expectations. Those are the sort of four things. So okay. Three key ingredients and that resulting emerging expectation.
Okay, and as you're describing that, and with the Uber example, I was thinking in my mind about the product lifecycle, right? Mm-hmm. And so maybe I'll try to include a picture in the show notes for this. The product lifecycle starts with where you've introduced the product, we're trying to get enough sales that people pay enough attention that we move into a growth phase, mm-hmm. where rapid adoption of the product really begins. And then we go into the early majority where, you know, we're kind of in the main market. You know, people are adopting it, or in the actual life cycle model is called maturity. And then we start the decline eventually when sales drop off, right? Of and I can see how watching a new innovator like Uber that is still in that innovation stage could give you some really good insights about what to expect later for growth, which is the real trend, right? Because there's not really a trend happening that early if you're just in that early adoption phase.
Agreed, but the rate of adoption is so much faster now, you know, that curve has shrunk. You know, the rate that a company like Uber or Airbnb, that those expectations travel around the world faster than ever before. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's faster this year than it was last year. So this curve has been compressed.
Yeah, the timeline is really shortened. And I was looking at a graph recently about this, that the number of years it took things like a washing machine to reach most people, right? Compared to internet was about 5 years to really kind of reach absorption. And now we're down into products that are within months of you know, they seem like they come out of nowhere. And they don't really, but all of a sudden they've been quickly adopted by everyone.
And at a global level, I mean, the sort of on-demand taxi model is, you know, everywhere, whether you're looking in Indonesia, in Nigeria, you know, it's not just in sort of these Western, you know, developed markets where these businesses are being rapidly adopted. Mm-hmm. It's the reach is global. That's another reason we would say, when you're looking, when you're tracking businesses to better understand consumers as well, there's a point I really want to stress. You have to be prepared to look outside your industry and outside what you might think of as your market, because expectations transfer across borders. You know, the expectation that we always, sorry, the example we always give is related to Uber as well. It's that expectation for one-touch delivery of a service. You now have it with the Amazon Dash buttons. Mm-hmm. You can get beef jerky, detergent, toilet paper, you know. And if you were there in fast-moving consumer goods saying, this doesn't impact us, we're not a taxi company, you know, you're not casting your net far enough to understand the trends.
That's a great point. And I would have, if we had a discussion about this, I would never have thought about this emphasis on looking at businesses to help with where consumers are going, right? So I'd probably create some fancy ethnographic approach that just wouldn't capture the heart of this as nearly as easily. So let's dive into actually spotting the trends. Mm-hmm. Where do we start with that, and walk us through the steps to spot trends?
Yeah, so essentially we've laid out a process, an end-to-end process in our book, Trend-Driven Innovation, and you can follow the whole thing along, you know, by the page. That would be fantastic, but you can also come and go at various, you can enter various sections one at a time, you know, depending on the task at hand. Mm-hmm. But so just, if you don't mind, I'll walk through the sort of end-to-end process.
That'd be perfect.
As you requested, that begins with scanning. Mm-hmm. So the odds are most of your listeners are already doing this, and they probably feel a little bit guilty about it or disorganized. You know, you've got, by the, you know, for example, I love the Quartz email newsletter. I will open about 6 links from that first thing in the morning before I've even woken up, and I've have 6 articles.
I don't know about this email newsletter. So what is this?
Quartz. It's from, I think it's from The Atlantic. Okay. Quartz. It's just a business news, current events thing. A very nice global roundup. Every morning I'll check that. I'll open, you know, probably 5 or 6 links from it. Mm-hmm. My colleagues on the UK time zone are messaging me all kinds of things to check out on Slack. And this isn't just because I'm in a trend firm. You know, everyone's being bombarded with exciting innovations, whether it's from their Twitter feed, you know, the magazines they subscribe to. So you already have your feelers out. You're already reading about these innovations.
Right.
And it's possible you feel guilty about it. You're thinking, oh, I've got to prepare for the upcoming meeting I have. But what you're doing is you're watching these innovations. The next thing you have to do is, you know, look out for the combination of basic needs bumping up against drivers of change and the emerging expectations that the innovations represent. Once you start doing that, you can spot trends. And I would highly recommend, if you want to sort of formalize your process, and I recommend a service, you know, like Evernote. I'm not plugging them because I get any benefit from it, but Evernote is a really handy way across all of your devices. If you're seeing these interesting articles on Fast Company or on Wired or PSFK or Springwise, all of these great sources, you can tag these innovations by, you know, keywords or trends that you're beginning to spot. So the sort of the next thing I would suggest is building a trend framework. And you can use a trend framework that another company has developed, like our one, where we have 16 megatrends, or you can create your own themes of areas that are of interest to your organization, say personalization, sustainability, this kind of thing. Once you have these buckets, you can start collecting the trends you're tracking underneath them. So that's the process of scanning for trends. You have all this information out there. You need to start tagging it, categorizing it, putting it into these relevant buckets. But of course, there's so much information out there, the next step is to focus on what's relevant for you. So stage 2, you want to interrogate each trend. How is it relevant for my company in terms of, you know, the maturity of the trend, the locality I'm in, and the industry that I'm in? We have a tool called the Consumer Trend Radar that is just fantastic for, you know, you print this thing off poster-sized, and you can plot your innovation roadmap. So it's something we cover in the book. You can get together marketers, product managers, and you can all bring these trends that you're interested in to the table and figure out which ones are impacting you, you know, when you'd need to act, how you would respond, and, you know, how resource intensive a response would be.
Max, do you have an example I could include in the show notes for this interview of what that consumer trend radar looks like?
Of course.
That'd be great.
Send you a link to the consumer trend radar. And then the next tool as well, I can send you a link to. So the next stage is to generate ideas. You know, once you've been scanning for trends, you've focused on what's relevant, you need to come up with new products, you know, new services, new marketing that tap into the emerging insights at the heart of the trend. And we have another tool, this one you can find online, and I'll provide for the show notes, the Consumer Trend Canvas, generously inspired by the Business Model Canvas from Alex Osterwalder. Mm-hmm. And this is just a really, really useful tool for contextualizing the trend in terms of your own business and then actually generating new ideas. And I've had the pleasure of working with, you know, the government of Dubai with this, with 3M, with Reckitt Benckiser, you know, with entertainment companies. All kinds of businesses can use this tool to generate new ideas. Because if you're just tracking the trends and you're not acting on the insights, it's a complete waste of time.
Let's take just a couple of minutes to break down the information you collect inside the Consumer Trend Canvas.
Yes.
So probably a lot of listeners are familiar with the Business Model Canvas. It's a, you know, kind of that one page view of what a business is about. In the past, I've had on Ash Mariah, we've talked about the Lean Canvas, which works really well, not just for a startup, but for looking at a product and the information you should collect on one page about a product. What information do you collect about consumers in your canvas?
So the kind of you'll recognize the elements of the canvas from what I've been describing earlier in this conversation. So the first thing you're looking for is the innovations, you know, what's inspired you to sort of the cluster of innovations that you think indicate the trend. Okay. And best represent the trend. Then you're putting in the basic needs and wants that the trend taps into. So does it help consumers, you know, self-actualize? Does it help them in terms of convenience? Does it help them live according to their values? So that's covered in the basic needs section. And then you break down the drivers of change. Why is this happening now? Into shifts, which are sort of long-term changes. You know, something like the shift towards sustainability or, you know, some environmental factors. But then you could have something like triggers, which might be, you know, the VW emissions scandal. Mm. That could be a trigger depending on the trend you're looking at, or a breakthrough in 3D printing. You know, that could be a trigger. So you've got basic needs, inspiration, drivers of change, and then emerging expectations. And it's really fascinating to see people draw out these emerging expectations because it's very intuitive and it's just a question that all kinds of professionals, they don't really ask unless they're told to ask it. You know, that's the value of these canvases, right? They draw out those answers that you can answer. You just haven't asked the question before.
Right. And they're great collaboration tools. I can see, you know, this canvas being a wonderful collaboration tool with your colleagues to go through this information.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I know work isn't supposed to be that fun, I suppose, but I find I really enjoy working with clients when we get the canvas. When we get a workshop booked in to work with the canvas, it's amazing because even if they're, and sometimes we do them with, you know, high school students and they figure it out. It's easy enough that a high school student can do it, but also your CTO can work with it. But the second half of the canvas is, so that the left-hand side, the bit I've described, is about, you know, understanding and breaking down the trend. And then the next side is about just categorizing, is this a, you know, the innovation target? Is this a product opportunity, a marketing opportunity, a business model opportunity? So you answer that question. And then also, who can we reach with it? And by the time you've outlined, you know, who you can reach to tackle these emerging expectations and whether it's a product opportunity, you get to the sort of innovation, you know, the end of the maze, so to speak. It shouldn't feel like a maze. I shouldn't say that. But you get to the end of the canvas and you will have, you know, your team will have like five great ideas. And then they usually argue over which one to present back to other groups in the workshop. But if you have multiple ideas, that's great. You can, you know, deploy multiple ideas.
Yeah, excellent. Good. Thanks for taking us through the canvas. So to catch up here, we had scanning, really the environment, looking for the trends, using some kind of tool like Evernote, which is a great tool you suggested I have used too, for bucketing that information, doing focus, and the consumer trend radar was a tool, then generating, creating those ideas, and using the consumer trend canvas for that. And that takes us to the fourth one.
Execute. Yes. Get the ideas to market. You know, and I think we'd admit at Trendwatching that our focus is more on the first three stages, but we have some, you know, interesting, you know, I'd obviously recommend something like the Lean Startup, something like that, if you really want to work on getting products to market. But we do tackle it in the book, and we have some interesting ideas about, you know, the rise of using pre-tail, which is what we would call Kickstarter, Indiegogo. You can almost use this as a product testing tool. And it's not just for, you know, a college graduate who has a Kickstarter project they want to launch. We've seen Sony use it. We've seen, who's the big board game company? I'm blanking. the makers of Monopoly.
Yeah, I wish I could help you.
That's not Hasbro, is it? Might be Hasbro.
But the makers of Monopoly, yes.
Yeah, they, you know, we've seen big companies are now using, you know, crowdfunding pages to kind of test products. You can use Vaporware, you can do pop-ups. There's all kinds of ways to kind of cost-effectively get this product to market and start testing the response as soon as possible. Because we are firm believers in, that sort of lean startup approach, get it to market, you know, see what the response is and evolve the product rather than try and get it right and wait 15 years and the trend is gone.
Right. There's a quote that Mark Twain shared, and I'm going to flub it, so I'll paraphrase it, right? But basically, it's better to make incremental improvement than to wait for perfection.
Exactly.
Right. And we're all better off, and that's what Lean Startup is all about, get something out there to get feedback on.
Exactly. And then our sort of bonus stage of trend-driven innovation is, you know, to keep doing these four steps, to continually work with this process, you have to build a culture that understands, you know, change is happening, the rate of change is accelerating. So everyone in the company should be watching out for this change, looking out for emerging expectations, and, you know, responding within their own work.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
There's all kinds of fun ways to sort of spread. Well, fun to me because I'm a trend nerd, but there's all kinds of fun ways we've seen people, you know, build that culture, whether it's creating contests inside a huge organization, having a monthly internal newsletter where you share the innovations that represent the trends that could impact you, or even we've had people put our trend briefings up in the you know, lavatories so people can read them while they're washing their hands, hopefully, but
whatever business they have to take care of in there.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that's great. Somehow, anytime we do something new like this, so I suspect when you or others are starting an organization with an internal effort or something that you're coming in to help them with, to pay attention to the trends and how that impacts their actions and what they're thinking about for product development and innovation. Sometimes it can be a kind of a one-time activity, right? Mm-hmm. And this fifth part of the culture is really getting it to stick and making it part of the normal processes of the organization.
100%. And I don't want to name any names, but you can see even in the sort of the Silicon Valley world where you've had extremely successful startups that had that key insight when they founded the company that was very much, you know, at the tip of the zeitgeist. And then they just sort of didn't continue to develop. They kind of stopped. And it's the successful companies like Facebook understand that they need to continually evolve. And
right.
Whether that's internal development or buying the next big thing, which they seem to be extremely good at doing.
Yeah, well, a couple of examples came to mind as you talked through this. You know, the whole movement once upon a time to software as a service, right? From my background, software product development, from the client server model to software as a service, now to cloud computing. You know, those are really big shifts. And if you were a software company making a client server product, and you missed the software as a service move, you know, that could have a detrimental impact on you. And I know companies that suffered greatly because they did miss it, right? Mm-hmm. They just hit it at the wrong time on an upstart trend. And then I remember this great conversation I had with the owner of the largest independent toy company on the East Coast. And he was talking about these friendship bracelets that were the rubber band bracelets.
Oh, yeah.
I forget what those
things. I remember those.
Yeah.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
Everyone wore these, right? And he made so much money selling these things, right? But then he was starting to get a feeling that they were going away. And he sold out his inventory at a discount and didn't replace it. And 6 months later, the school districts started banning them.
Yeah.
So just as important, seeing trends on the uptick are trends on the down. And yeah. I don't know if you get involved with that also, right? Paying attention to which trends are starting to dwindle.
So I think, I mean, that's a very specific, the bracelet example is a very specific example. I think we would say often the sort of downturn is more around a specific type of product. Mm-hmm. What's at the heart of a trend, this combination of the basic needs it's solving, those won't go away. So what you can do is say, you can revisit the drivers of change. How is this developing? How is convenience developing? Because right. if you had that idea of the trend and then you didn't continue to evolve with the trend, you would fall behind. We'd never really say so much that they're dying out. We're just so much pointing you down another branch of development, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah, so see if this fits your example.
Yep.
I'm thinking of what you said, see if this example fits, like the VCR tape, right? So the VCR mm-hmm. was convenience. I can watch a movie in my house now. Mm-hmm. Over time, the DVD became more convenient because it would hold more information, exactly. higher resolution. Now, over time, streaming is a whole lot more convenient. I don't have to go get anything.
Exactly.
And there's declines taking place in those other areas as we see the trend up for streaming.
Exactly. So that's a great example. I mean, really what's at the heart of that is the desire for convenience, the desire for entertainment, the desire mm-hmm. for variety. And the combination of those desires, embracing drivers of change, such as new technologies, including higher bandwidth, has led to those new innovations. Mm. So those are all steps along, the path of one trend, so to speak, as opposed to saying VCRs are a trend.
Right.
We would never say that.
Okay. Yeah. So you're really focusing on the consumer need and what's driving that need.
And watching exactly, and watching how they expect that need to be satisfied.
Okay. So share an example then of your recent work, not necessarily like super recent, but of a yep. trend that we would relate to, how that was found and tell us about the trend.
Sure. So, I mean, I guess it's always a team effort. I mean, sometimes I like to internally feel like I've come up with a trend of my own, but it's very much thanks to the help of our, 3,000 spotters, our team of analysts who are all over the world and the various brainstorms we have. So it's kind of, can be a beautiful, clean process where we identify something, but it can be someone brings up a new innovation they've seen in a call and says, what does this represent? And everyone goes, wow, that's really interesting. And it's sort of on our radar. We have internal systems to keep track of them. But then the next call, someone says, remember that, that right. thing you mentioned, do you think it relates to this? And then we start almost using the canvas, but we don't always have to break it out and going, well, what are the drivers of change? What are the overlapping needs? What are the emerging expectations? So an example might be, Mercedes-Benz including a haptic accelerator pedal on some of their newer vehicles that sort of lets you know when you're going to, it was on one of their hybrid vehicles. So when you were going to switch over from battery to petrol, it would give you like a slight nudge that you were accelerating to that changeover. And, so that's kind of haptic feedback coming in. And then you have Apple Watch launching with a feature where you can get a sort of light tap on the wrist, right?
Right.
And at the same time, there's a stress bracelet we saw crowdfunded on Kickstarter called Olive, which alerts you. It detects your stress levels, according to your temperature and your pulse. And when it detects that you're stressed, it gives you another little tap and it lights up and helps you control your breathing. Hmm. And we're asking ourselves, what is all this? We're not just going to say this is haptic feedback. That's not really, we're not just going to describe the technology behind it and call it a day. We're going to say, right, this is less intrusive information delivery. Why is this happening? Well, consumers expect more information, in their digitized lifestyles, they expect to know the weather, they expect to be able to answer any question at any point. But they're also, there's a rising concern with, phones as a distraction, whether you're driving or even having dinner with someone, you care about. So we saw the rise of intimate info is the trend I'm talking about. And these are services that provide that information delivery. They make the information very actionable, immediately accessible, glanceable even, but without distracting you. That would be a case where we saw the innovations first, and then we were able to understand the drivers of change and everything behind it.
Very good. So you actually are doing that synthesis work in that example of what are some indications of similar sort of technologies, the haptic mm-hmm. feedback, and what do they mean in the larger sense of a trend to mm-hmm. consumers? Mm-hmm. And I have not adopted the Apple Watch yet.
No.
And I'm waiting just to see where this market and this emerges. But one of the things I found more compelling than anything else was mm-hmm. as someone who used to travel an awful lot and would spend my time walking through big cities from destination to destination, and you probably do this if you're out serving, working with customers, the idea of a watch that would just buzz either on the left or right side of it on my wrist to tell me yeah. to turn right or left at the next intersection as I was walking, that mm-hmm. was actually really compelling because mm-hmm. it is unobtrusive. I can be talking to a colleague and still get to the destination, without the interruption.
100%. I think so. That's a classic example. So rather than us telling you whether the Apple Watch is going to win or lose, or if it's going to die out or be a huge success, the easier question to ask as a product designer is, will consumers expect ever more immediate and actionable information delivery? Mm-hmm. And are their expectations rising with devices that vibrate to tell you when to turn left? Yes. Well, what does that mean for our product line? How can we respond to that?
And there was a framework that you shared in setting up the example, and I want to make sure I got it right. You talked about the drivers of change, mm-hmm. the overlapping needs, those things that you see that kind of synthesize
exactly, together. Exactly, the basic needs.
And then the actual expectations of the consumer. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So those three things working together to help indicate where a trend is forming and what's going on.
Yeah, you can look at something like Airbnb and the sort of, sharing economy. It's a driver of change is, an increasingly connected marketplace. So you can go online and you can find an apartment to share. Mm-hmm. You have a platform where you can put your make your apartment available. Why is Airbnb so popular? It taps into the basic needs of, desire for value. But also, it creates this new expectation for a more authentic experience as a traveler. So as a hotel, you're not just going, okay, we can provide hotels everywhere. We're providing that and we can try and provide value. We can compete with Airbnb there. They have to recognize this emerging expectation that Airbnb has created for an authentic traveling experience that you don't really get if you stay in a Hilton, but looks identical if you're in Paris or if you're in, Las Vegas.
Absolutely. It's a powerful trend. It's also a good example of these apparently what we might first think of as a harebrained idea. Like, who would ever want to do that, right?
Oh, yeah.
And that's where so much of innovation begins, because if we're not doing something different, something new, it's not really innovation in the first place. And we overcome the obstacles along the way. And they did a good job of tapping into a trend. And maybe first present with millennials and the sharing economy, yeah. but certainly growing far beyond that.
Well, what you've mentioned reminds me the reality is I, even doing this, as a full-time job, regularly have to check my gut reaction, mm-hmm. Oh my God, who would do that? We do, as a team, we try and help each other with that, because sometimes we even send each other links and we're in a brainstorm, this is ridiculous, it'll never take on. But the classic example is when Snapchat started, when it first came out, all the people of our generation were reporting about it as a sexting app and that teenagers were using it to send nude selfies. And really, just because they were disappearing images, that was why it would be successful or not. And of course, it was actually the young sort of digitally savvy people thought it was weird what we were doing, posting everything on Facebook. And what they were doing was far more savvy, having these intimate conversations with, one or even 50 friends in a sort of less permanent way. This digital ephemerality has become like a massive trend. And so many people wrote it off as this sexting app.
Now it's core to Facebook capability, right? That you can have real-time videos added as part of what you share.
Exactly. And we probably need to start doing our trend briefings on Snapchat. We just haven't crossed that bridge yet. Even as a trend firm, sometimes it's hard for us to keep up.
Lots of new tools to look into adopting. Well, great. I appreciate you taking us through a lot of that information on how to spot trends mm-hmm. and that framework, too, for identifying a trend and doing that synthesizing work. And obviously, for anyone that wants to dive into more of this, the book Trend Driven Innovation, I'll provide a link to that to make it easy to find that in the show notes. And also, can you share an innovation quote with us? I always like to ask guests to for an innovation quote and why you chose it?
Yes. My favorite kind of quote is from Seth Godin. And we were both speaking at the market research event in Orlando last year. And I watched his keynote. And obviously, he's an incredible presenter. And he had this expression that's part of a much bigger idea: treat different people differently. And it just struck a chord with me because one of our biggest trends, our big publications of the last few years, has been the rise of post-demographic consumerism. Hmm. You know, don't think of people as women or as Latinos or as millennials. You know, forget about these demographic segments. Consumers are more than ever able to pursue their own identity through the products and services they buy. So you should try and provide that very tailored service all the way down from your marketing to your product design to, you know, your pricing. So I think that is encapsulated very succinctly in four words: treat different people differently.
That's a good lesson on market segmentation for sure. Seth Godin is definitely a marketing guru and brings a lot of insights through all his contributions.
He's good at the soundbite, isn't he?
What a great opportunity to get to share the stage in a way with him at the conference.
Well, yeah, I spoke the next day, but I'm still claiming that I spoke on the same stage to Seth Godin.
Absolutely. So, well, the work you guys are doing there at Trend Watching is very valuable to get a handle on what trends are going on. And again, for product managers, they make or break the work we're doing. If we hit a trend at the wrong time, it can hurt us. And if we can capitalize on the upswing, it can just catapult the product work we do. Leave listeners with just how to get more insights about the work that you are doing with the company and how they can follow what you're up to.
I mean, a very good first step is just to sign up to our trend briefings, our monthly briefing. They have 250,000 subscribers. And you can just go to trendwatching.com and you should be able to find that, you know, the subscribe page pretty easily. They also have, we also do reports for Asia, Africa, and South and Central America. And then check out the Consumer Trend Canvas. It's also available online. And then finally, yeah, hopefully check out the book. If you want, you don't just want to read about the latest trends, but you want to act on them, I highly recommend getting a copy of Trend Driven Innovation. And hopefully it will help you act on those emerging expectations and stay ahead of what consumers demand.
Excellent. Max, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. If we're not already connected on LinkedIn, send me a connection request. Just search for Chad McAllister, PhD on LinkedIn. And you'll find all the notes of the discussion with Max at theeverydayinnovator.com/083. I hope you check it out. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training Your Customers Will Love You For. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.